So I have 1 week left at Montreat, and I teach English composition. I teach survey of British literature. I teach a literary magazine editing class, and I'm the director of the Writing Center.
How long have you been at Montreat?
I've been at Montreat as an instructor for 3 years, and I'm also an alumni. My undergraduate is from there.
And when did this Community Life Covenant come about?
So I found out about it in our spring semester faculty meeting, so that would be January 2016. No actual revealing of the document, just that there was going to be one, and that it was part of the president's campaign of the college kind of needing to rebrand itself and clarify itself in the market. You know, all of that, very understandable. All institutions need to have moments of clarity. So he said, you know, we're also going to be adding to this brand clarification, this life and conduct covenant. That was January of 2016. And then we saw a first draft of that several months later. The first draft was very extensive, and this is the part where in the press release when they talk about the listening sessions, I think the number was 30 hours or something. That's when the listening sessions happened. They did listen. I don't think that they heard some of the points that we were trying to, not just we, but many professors, just questioning different content. And they said, you know, they would take the document back and give us a revision. So many of us were hopeful that various parts of the life and conduct statement would be revised or, you know, rethought out. And so we got the revised version in March of this semester. And that's when we had to make the decision whether it was just the idea of the institution speaking for the individual with a life and conduct covenant statement like this, or all the way to the other end of the spectrum where maybe there was something in the covenant that a professor didn't agree with. That was the moment where we had to decide, when our contract comes through with this handbook that includes this covenant, if we don't sign it, then we know that our, you know, our contract is kind of nullified at that point. Or those of us that are on year-to-year contracts, then of course, you know, it just wouldn't be offered to us if we weren't planning to sign it. So,
okay. And so when you saw the language when it was originally introduced, it did have this language about sanctity of marriage and the stuff about abortion in there?
Absolutely, yes, on the affirming the, you know, very heteronormative view of marriage, that it was, you know, designed for one man and one woman. That was in the original, and that, you know, kind of stayed in the revision. I think the language that shows up in the life and conduct statement now is that we are to affirm and uphold the sanctity of life. I believe it's upon conception. So one of the major discussions that happened in my listening session was some members of the science department talking about how that doesn't give space for those in the department who feel like life begins with the heartbeat, which, you know, of course, gets you into that liminal space of, you know, the 3 days where if you want to provide the morning after pill or all of that stuff, like, you know, where does that fall with insurance? And so we had a lively discussion about conception life versus heartbeat life, but you can't extrapolate that out to abortion. But I think they stuck with, like, you know, affirming that life begins at conception.
So, I see. Okay. And so why did you choose not to sign it?
I felt all along very uncomfortable about, I'm not uncomfortable with handbooks. Like, I'm, you know, like, everywhere I've worked has had a handbook. Not uncomfortable with that at all. Not uncomfortable with the statement of faith. I wrote my, you know, I wrote mine when it was time to be employed at Montreat College. What I was uncomfortable with was that a document like this that doesn't ask me to understand the college's position and as an employee uphold that position when I'm in the classroom or at events, but effectually asked me to believe all of this and sign my name saying that I can affirm and uphold all of the things in this document all the time in my daily life. I mean, I can't do that. It's not my personal testimony. It's not my personal life and conduct statement that I wrote, and I certainly can't give like the one thing that I own, which is my name, and say, absolutely, I can uphold these things all the time, and I can do it so well that you can predicate my employment on it. If I don't do it, it weaponizes this document, and I'm out of a job, and that's my honor. So I can't do that. If you are an evangelical Christian, frankly, if you are anyone who is seeking to understand how to better be positioned in this world to affect change and affect change for good, then you know for sure that you're constantly learning. You're constantly being showed how to do something better, how to be more empathetic. If you're a Christian, how to be more Christ-like. That means that you're changeable. Once you sign a document like this, it freezes you. And you're on the hook. And I can't be on the hook for an institution. I'll be on the hook for Christ, but I won't be on the hook for an institution. And I love it there. I wanted to die at Montreat. Like, I wanted them to find me in my office at 98. Like, thank God, Green's dead. Finally, we can get a new English professor. Like, I love it there, but I can't do this.
So this has been really difficult for you then, because you do have a warm attitude towards the school itself, you know, setting aside this covenant.
Yeah, the ethos of Montreat, I feel like, is really bigger than any administration. What it has there, what it's had there, is this really large table where Christ is present for everyone, regardless of what you're bringing to the table. That's the Montreat that formed me. Yeah, to the ethos of Montreat, I have great loyalty.
Sort of broadly speaking, I don't know if you can answer this, but since you've been there for a while, what do you think the attitudes are in general at Montreat concerning sexuality and hot-button issues like abortion? Does this reflect the prevailing attitude there, do you think?
You know, that is a great question that we talk about a lot. I'm in the humanities department, and you get kind of conditioned to the opinions of your colleagues. Everyone's very open-minded, and in fact, it's never really been an issue of discussion until it was made an issue of discussion by needing to have this document, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
If you go with, like, Christo-normative stuff, like, if you're a sinner saved by grace, like, you've got a lot of stuff to do with yourself. So it's only been recently with this document that, like, the discussion has even turned to what other people are doing. We've mostly talked about in our classrooms or amongst ourselves, like, how can we be better? How can we see a different perspective? How can we put ourselves in someone else's shoes or look through their eyes to make our own path more direct? This is the first time that this has really been a discussion, and it's derailed some of the energy of faculty and staff. It's derailed the students, and it's so sad. I don't think it was intended to do that. I think it was part of clarification, but it's really turned the discussion on to something that before just wasn't the thing in academics that we felt like we needed to talk about. Who could get married? I mean, the sanctity of life and all of that, yes, like in Composition 101, they love to debate it. But like after that, you're thinking about like the broader idea of humanity and disenfranchisement and all of that stuff. So,
has it dominated the conversation?
It could have if we let it. I made a decision after I knew that I couldn't sign it to try not to let it dominate my mind and my thoughts, like whether it was in a moment of grief or anger or whatever. Like, there's only so many parts of you that you can give away. And my job as an instructor was like, if this is the end, that I better teach everything I think these kids need to hear and think about, and I better do it great. And when the door shuts behind me, you know, I can't control what's said about me after that, but until then, go hardcore. But yeah, I mean, it's sucked everybody's energy.
How would you describe yourself religiously?
I consider myself to be an evangelical Christian, as in evangelicalism as like a discourse. I fully believe in Reformed theology, that we have the right and the ability to work with Scripture. I think interpretation is like it's not a great word, but like we can encounter Scripture in our own way, right? Like Christ can speak to us directly. I actually came to Montreat for the first time in the 90s as an agnostic, and it was through some students and some professors who weren't afraid to engage with me on my level or over a drink or whatever, that continually kind of pointed me to Christ, where I could come as I was and not how some institution or church felt like I had to be before I was welcome in the door. So my friend Matt Langston, who is in Articles 2, said, you know, I didn't become a Christian because people pointed me to theology. I became a Christian because people pointed me to Christ. And I really feel like that was it for me.
Mm. Sorry to get personal, and I won't include this if you don't want to, but,
okay.
You know, like Nathan had mentioned, you know, his wife considers herself bisexual, you know, that's part of his issue with this. I know 8 faculty members are leaving, at least from the news article I read. Is it that people are gay, you know, that they're working there? Do you consider yourself homosexual? Any of those?
That's a perfectly legitimate question. From my understanding, everyone leaving would define themselves as both being heterosexual and presenting as the gender in which they were born. So we're not looking at like a sudden outing moment. And I don't think that everybody leaving, you know, would say it's because they're coming down on views of marriage, who's allowed to get married, or views of who has the right to a woman's body. I think you're going to find that many of them feel like this document is just not okay. It's not okay for an institution to have this much control in our life. I'm straight. My husband and I met in Montreat in the 90s. We've been married for 22 years. But I can certainly tell you that when I talked about how if you're really trying to be faithful or you're really trying to, you know, affect change in the world, that you continue to be shown new things. If our school and if our churches say that gay people can be Christians, then the question is, why are they not then privy to the privileges of Christianity, which one of those is the sanctity of marriage?
What do you think about the school's position as far as their, I guess, you know, pretty much their right, since they're a religiously affiliated school, that they have the right to ask of their employees a certain type of conduct, I guess, if you will. What do you think about that?
I guess what I think is maybe bigger than our school. I think that the bigger conversation is like, how did it become nationally that this kind of thing is okay? Like the sanctuary institution where you can continue to take government funding or federal student loans, which comes from all kinds of taxpayers, all identities, marginalized or right in the hegemonic circle, but you can legally delineate, some would say discriminate, against various individuals that can be employed there. Like, I don't understand how that can happen. You can take money from everyone, but then you can exclude some of those various people. How do I think about our school? I think that if the law's there and you need it, you know, that's going to be the counsel that you're given. This is there for institutions like them right now, and they're within their legal right to do it. I think that the law is sad.
Nathan obviously had a lot of reservations about this covenant, but he went ahead and signed it for financial reasons, of course. And so what do you think about his position of saying, like, well, you know, I mean, it's obviously not going to change his opinion on the matter. So he signed it, and I assume he just goes on with his life.
So I love Nate, and I'm so proud of him. And I don't know what it would be like to be Nathan in the middle of all of this. My husband is able-bodied. We have 5 children together. We each work several jobs. We have very little debt. Nathan's wife is disabled. He has restrictions with the movements of his family due to, you know, one of his children being from a different relationship. I can't imagine what it would be like to be Nathan and feel like I've got a library sciences degree and a master's in English and like 3 months to find a job. I'm proud of him for still speaking out because we were told not to, and he's the only one that has a job there next year out of the 3 of us that were in the original articles.
Yeah.
So he's put himself out there probably even more than like Matt or myself has, because he's got a contract, and you know, North Carolina is an at-will state. So
yeah, I asked him if he was worried about his employment there, and he said a little, but he did think that maybe the school wouldn't be foolish enough to fire him over this. But I guess time will tell. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, time will tell what they'll do in the semester when the students are still there. Is different than what they'll do in the quiet of the summer. So, you know, we're all very aware that his risk extends past the last day of the semester. But he has a lot of support from students, from faculty, from town. He has a lot of people that have his back, so I think he'll be okay.
Yeah. How are you going to be? Obviously, you're going to be losing a job soon, so do you have anything lined up?
Yeah, I'm going to continue with my dissertation, doing that work at UNC Greensboro. And while I do that, I will be bartending at the Lake Lure 1927 resort, putting my degree to good use. I kind of want to hang out with my kids and do a job that I can leave there at work for a minute, you know, like not bring it home with me. It's been a hard semester. I've got some chickens. I want to weed my garden, make some drinks, and write and research, and then I'll get into the TA program at UNCG and teach again. But for the minute, I'm just going to take a little bit of time.
When's your last day?
My last exam to administer is May 11th, but I will be marching in graduation on the 13th. So that'll be my last day. I think HR said I have to have my office cleaned out by like the 12th or something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But some of my first students that came in with me my first year teaching at Montreat are graduating, so I wanted to make sure I could, you know, march.
Is this pretty much a done deal? I mean, you don't think there's any chance that the school would reverse itself?
I don't really know that they could. I mean, you can. I mean, you can do anything. But my understanding is that this is the direction and the brand that they're comfortable being right now. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, if you look on social media and stuff, there's support around here for this brand of education and this brand of Christianity intersected with higher level learning. So I think they've picked the boat that they're going to be in.
And what do you think it will be like to have your last day there?
It's going to suck super hard. That's not a great quote for the radio. It's going to be one of the more difficult moments in my life. I love my students. They're just incredible, incredible people. They are from diverse identities, diverse religions, diverse class. I see them all because I have two of the classes that I teach are required. They're like prerequisites. So I get students from, you know, all majors, and we have a great time, and I love them. So it's going to be pretty difficult. Not looking forward to it.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
You're really welcome. Thanks for calling. Thanks for being interested in us.